From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. And we're pleased to welcome in Deacon Casey Walker, who is, among other things, one of the hats he wears, and a very important hat, is the head of the Ad Hoc Committee on Racism here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Deacon, good day to you.
Bob, how you doing?
Doing very good. Always good to have you on the program.
My pleasure.
We would love to have you in person.
One day I'd like to see you face to face.
Maybe God is keeping us apart for a reason.
He's got a plan.
Yeah, indeed. Well, it's good to have your voice on the air. And the CDC just announced today that you can do a radio interview without your mask.
They're on top of it.
They were right on top of it.
Yeah.
came out with it just right before airtime. So. Yeah, indeed. Well, first off, tell us a little bit about your background as a deacon.
Not a very extensive background. I was ordained here in the diocese in 2018, and pretty much right before my ordination, the bishop invited me to be part of the Ad Hoc Committee Against Racism.
Right.
And then after ordination, I was asked to chair the committee. So pretty much my entire time as a deacon in the diocese has been spent working with the task group, as well as my normal duties, so to speak, there at St. Basil's Parish.
Mm-hmm.
in Vallejo.
Yeah, yeah. So what a beautiful parish that is, too.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I was at one. They had the vocations dinner there in the gym a few years ago, and just a beautiful parish. So unfortunately, that was one of the days in Vallejo where it was 104 degrees, which is so rare there.
Very rare.
It was like they haven't invented air conditioning in Vallejo because they don't need it. They get the sea breeze. That's their air conditioning. It was a warm night.
Packed in there.
And, you know, boy, what a number of vocations have come out of that parish.
We had a nice little run there, for a few years, and still working on getting people to answer that call to the vocation.
Indeed.
Keep us in prayer.
Well, we will keep them in prayer. And by the way, they're going to have a vocations dinner on the 31st of July, and everybody's invited, and they think they're going to be at about 50% capacity. It'll be at St. Mary's here in Sacramento on July the 31st, but we'll talk more about that later. But Deacon, tell us about the Ad Hoc Committee Against Racism and sort of the founding of it and the it doesn't take a lot of thought behind it. I mean, yeah, we have racism and we need to fight it, no question about it.
Yeah. Well, as you know, when the CDC when the USCCB put out their letter, Open Wide Our Hearts,
right?
Bishop Soto wanted to have a response to that. And that was kind of where the Ad Hoc Committee started. I think from having conversations with Bishop Soto, he had been looking at racism and race relations specifically in the Sacramento area and throughout the state for a while. The first conversation I ever had with him was the Stephen Clark shooting,
mm-hmm.
and the response there that was going on in Sacramento. And I remember the conversation was at one of our deacon formation days. And then we fast forward a little bit to Open Wide Our Hearts and the visit that the diocese had from Bishop Barb. And we talked about things there. And then the committee has just kind of grown from there. What should we be working on? How do we address this? What kind of input, advice, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
Do we offer to the bishop? A lot of our work has been working individually with the parishes, and as we have talked in the past, really that point of communication. because this isn't going to get fixed until we're ready to have those tough conversations that you need to have around racism. Racism is really important for the folks who are on the wrong end of it, and the folks who don't have to deal with it. It's a tough conversation to want to have, especially when you start talking about church history. So the ad hoc committee, one of the things that we are adamant about are listening sessions where you can sit down with anybody and everybody and listen to their story. We realize that at the very beginning of these listening sessions, when people want to come and tell their story, with definitely, you know, people of color, African-Americans, but quite a few people from our Hispanic community wanted to come and share different stories. And then from there, we're starting to work on dialogue sessions where we have a couple of professionals, one in particular, Dr. Jason Javier Watson, who is over, he's the vice principal there at St. Francis High School in Sacramento. He's put together a magnificent program that we've been trying to roll out from the laity as well as clergy. Just to, you know, how do you deal when you hear somebody's story? What does that make you feel physically, emotionally, spiritually? And then, quite frankly, you know, how are you going? How do you deal with that? Because those are, again, those are tough places to be on either side of it, to think that nobody wants to hear your story and things like that. So that is really the bulk of what we've been doing. But let me also add this. Lately, we've been working with different parishes throughout the diocese because we know that any change, any real change that's going to happen, it's going to happen at the parish level. And then we're working as the ad hoc group to share that information amongst parishes, whether it's St. Basil's doing their thing with their Sister Thea Bowman group, Good Shepherds in Elk Grove. They have a group, and they're focusing on communication. We get a lot of things coming out of St. Ignatius and St. Francis there in Sacramento. Everybody is trying to address this original sin, as the bishop has called it and others have called it, in their own way. And the task group is trying to see what everybody is doing and then sharing that information across different platforms to just kind of have it grow as grassroots. And like I said, continue to have these conversations, continue to figure out how we can talk about it. And then we're really going to start to be able to combat it and make some headway. It's taken a long time to get us here, and this is not going to, we're not going to fix this, so to speak, in a short period of time. This is lifelong work. This is a transformation of heart work. It may be a better way to put it.
I remember
very long-winded answer, so I apologize.
No, I appreciate it very much. You know, I was a very small participant in the civil rights movement in the 60s. I was gung-ho and very much supportive, but didn't have much to contribute. But, you know, marched and talked to my friends and everything else. And yet, if you had told me that today, or told Martin Luther King back in, you know, I Have a Dream speech, that here 50-some years later, we would seemingly almost in the last year or two be going backward, I'd have been stunned.
Yeah. Yeah, it is kind of mind-boggling. Definitely kind of mind-boggling. Yeah, I can remember hearing about the civil rights growing up there in New Jersey and then visiting my mother and father's relatives in Aiken County, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back on in the fields, whether it was tobacco or cotton or whatever, my grandparents and great aunts and uncles, those areas they were still living. But as a young boy, I was very out of touch with what was going on. But you know, it's interesting that you were just talking about the civil rights because you know part of what Bishop talks about in his letter, and I know I'm going to butcher this man's name since I don't have it directly in front of me, but he quotes a French historian, Alexis de Coqueville, And again, I apologize if, for those who read the letter, know what I'm talking about. You know, words that he had written over 200 years ago. And as the bishop says, you know, still ring very much true today.
I have that letter right in, right in front of me.
And and so I had never heard of that gentleman. So of course, you know, I had to Google what was going on. But you know, hit it on the head, and as well as what you were just now saying. Maybe it's like one step forward, two steps back type scenario.
Yeah, Alexis de Tocqueville. I think when we were in school, you'd hear the D, de Tocqueville. And you just say it real fast and hope nobody noticed.
Nope.
You know who I'm talking about, de Tocqueville. And then you made the other guy feel stupid.
There you go.
Yeah. But, one of the problems, I think, speaking as a white person, is you don't want to be called a racist. You don't want to be considered, I guess some people don't care, but you don't want to be considered a racist. That'd be one of the worst things somebody could say to me, you know, and yet I'm capable of putting my foot in the wrong spot or saying the wrong thing or making assumptions that don't hit the nail on the head, you know. And I think that we feel, and I speak for myself, frequently I feel unempowered to, I was a VISTA volunteer in Atlanta, living with an African-American family in the projects, and learned, I know why they had set it up that way. For someone from a small town in Northern California to go into that experience at age 21, it was so different that I was learning every minute of every day about how people looked differently at the world than I did, and it was mind opening, but a lot of it I didn't know how to respond. I didn't know what would be helpful and what wouldn't be helpful. And I know that the people I was living with who were very kind and gracious and had nothing. I mean, they were living in the projects in Atlanta without air conditioning in the summer. You know, it was really it was tough. Well, you lived in South Carolina in the summer, so you know. But they said, you know, it's hard for somebody who doesn't have that first-person experience minute to minute to really understand. We hear all the time about, you know, the teenage black men or young boys having the conversation about if you ever get stopped by the police, things like that. Conversation I never had with my dad.
Right.
I mean, he always told me to be respectful and things, but he never warned me about the dangers of that interaction.
Yeah, both very, very good point. And everything that you were just alluding to, Bob, I think shows that having those conversations and us being able to find a spot where not necessarily we are comfortable with the conversation, but we can stay in that uncomfort, where we hope and pray that our values as Catholics, our values as Christians, allow us to be in a tough conversation and then have empathy. You know, there's different terms where people talking about, you know, are you, I'm not a racist. Okay, that's one thing. But are you anti-racist? You know, are you fighting against racism? Or do you just say, well, I don't treat anybody, you know, a certain way, or do you avoid those conversations? And, you know, not knowing kind of what your experiences were when you were in Atlanta, but, you know, you were living. You could not walk away from that, from those experiences. So, you know, after talking to you a few times and getting to know you a little bit, you know, non-face-to-face, they have most likely, you know, affected you. down to the fiber of who you are and
absolutely,
you know, have determined kind of the path that you're going to go on. And really, when you can start to have conversations like that and not run away from them, and because really that's the easiest thing to do. If you're not affected in a negative way, you can just say, well, you know, the church teaches to treat everyone the same, right? We can talk about all the virtuous teaching, but nobody wants to hear, so to speak, well, I'll say, nobody wants to hear about virtuous teaching when you're not living it, you know? And so it's very easy to throw the catechism or put the catechism up there when we're not having the conversations about why things aren't the way that the church says they are supposed to, but then you keep wanting to teach the catechism. Yeah, I used the analogy recently here on, as we just celebrated the Ascension, and as Jesus walked on the earth for 40 days after his resurrection and then rose again and then was ascended again, those 40 days he spent teaching again everything he taught for the years that he was doing ministry before, before his crucifixion. And I intend that to kind of us learning algebra, pre-calculus, and all those other math classes in high school and then in college, and then you have to go home and balance your checkbook, and you can't figure out why you're making all these mistakes. You know, you learned everything you were supposed to learn, now you have to apply it. And so we learn all the virtues. We learn how to treat people. We hear it in church constantly. We hear it from the bishops. We hear it from others. But then when we step out into that parking lot, into our cars, into our life at work, if we're not practicing those things, then there's obviously a disconnect that's what's going on. So, and again, I keep saying the same thing. It's going to be those conversations. It's going to be those learnings that are going out there. You know, if I can just kind of put a plug in, one of the things that the Sister Thea Bowman group down in Solano County has been doing, they've been once a month have been talking about different African Americans who are up for sainthood. And then they just had Mr. Jim Coleman, who works for St. Luke Productions. He does the one man show of Augustus Tolton. And he gave an excellent talking about the life of Augustus Tolton and the effect it has had on his life. And again, those are things that I think as a church we must continue to be willing to listen to and grow from. So
I mean, Tolton's story is so compelling because, like it or not, he had to fight the church. He wanted to serve God, and he had to fight the church, and a church that taught, and I mean, this is, I mean, I used to have people in the civil rights movement, you know, that they were starting to say things, you know, the stuff about, well, you got to leave your religion at the door, you know, religion and politics don't, you can have your religion inside the four walls of your church, but don't bring them into the marketplace. And I said, the reason I'm marching is because of my religion. It says that God created us all equal, that God created every human being on this earth. I don't need any more than that. That tells me that in God's eyes, we're all his children. He doesn't care what race you are. And he, you know, in his plan, he made different people of different races. That was in his plan. And his plan wasn't to keep us apart and hate each other.
No, I nail on the head. I agree 100%. You know, another, everything you just said, agree with 100%. The interesting thing about Tolton, and the bishop again talks about this in his letter with people he has talked to, African-Americans he's talked to, it was they stayed with the church in spite of the church.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
The calling of God to do what they were doing, to worship the way they were worshiping, and to embrace, you know, the one church that he created, was much more powerful than all the pushback, so to speak, or all the rejection that Tolton received, and quite frankly, some of the people that the bishop has talked to, I have talked to, are still feel like they're receiving today, right?
Yeah.
But as Sister Thea Bowman said, you know, God told her to bring her whole self, her whole black self, to the church with everything that He has given
yep.
her, and she did it. You know, that's the way she lived, and that's the way, you know, a lot of people are still living. So the church has lots of work to do. Thank the good Lord, you know, Bishop Soto is, you know, he's bringing us along this path, great leadership with
yes.
this letter, and pointing out a lot of wonderful things. And I'm very excited to see all the bullet points that he lists towards the end of the
mm-hmm.
this letter. A
very, very
aggressive list, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity to sit down with the bishop to figure out kind of, you know, hear what his thoughts are on how this is going to get accomplished, or hear what his thoughts are on how the task group can be of assistance to him and the diocese and the parishes. To
yeah, this was not some some lamentable full of lamenting about how racism's terrible and we just need to stop it. This was, as you say, very aggressive, very pointed, developed curriculum at Catholic schools, age-appropriate for elementary through high school,
right.
for learning about race and racism from a Catholic moral perspective. Parishes and Newman centers will be identified and supported in cultivating an active black Catholic ministry focused on liturgy, fellowship, teaching, and outreach into the African-American community. Expect that bishops, clergy, and pastoral co-workers will be more intentional in identifying and cultivating relationships with the African-American community and other active ethnic communities in the Diocese of Sacramento. You know, it's powerful stuff and
yeah.
practical stuff, and it's just so important. And I think it's great that Bishop Soto has really, you know, taken the bull by the horns here and really, really challenged us all that this is and now you look at the rise in hate crimes against Asian Americans or Asians in general. It's mind-boggling, you know,
yeah.
and yet it's documented. It's this the statistics are there.
Yeah.
It's
the bishop even points out, you know, he obviously recognizes what racism is, and this letter here, he's focusing on African-American racism. But, again, the timing couldn't be better, like you were just now saying, you know, with the hate crimes against the Asian community. These things need to be looked at. Racism needs to be addressed at all the different levels. And it is kind of interesting that I was thinking about this the other day, how right now racism is kind of separated. You know, we have racism against the African-American community, and now we're talking about, okay, there's a new, quote-unquote, racism
mm-hmm.
against, you know, the AAPI, as they're calling that,
right.
the
mm-hmm.
Asian-American Pacific Island
right.
community. You know, there's the racism against the Hispanic community, and sometimes when you hear it on the news or on the social media, it almost seems like it's three different things.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly.
But it's all the same. You know that. I know that. It's kind of, you know, how do we, again, the way to address all these, way to address racism, regardless of the community you're talking about, it's all the same. It's, you know, confront it head on and start, you know, having a conversation about it, and we get enough people who want to act, who want to do racism work, and teach the little ones and those coming up who will be the decision makers in another, you know, 10, 15 years, that's where we're going to have the biggest impact, I believe, anyway.
Well, that's ultimately where the change is, and I don't know what we do. What the rest of us did wrong in the last 50 years. But I know, I have four teenagers now, and they come home, and I mean, they don't have 10 seconds for anything racist, man. They I'm not saying they're pure and completely saintly, but it's like,
no, I get it.
And it's all their friends are that way too. I mean, yeah. And their friends, it's completely, it's the literal melting pot that wasn't socially engineered. It's just, these are kids that they're just naturally friends with. And yeah. And they can't believe the stories I tell them, not just about the 60s and 70s and 80s, but when they see something on TV, they can't believe that that's still going on, because it's and it gives me great hope for the future, that when these guys grow up, when this generation grows up that's in junior high and high school now, they're just not going to have any tolerance for it.
Yeah. No, I am with you 100% there. Every Sunday, and actually this was at the start of my, who's now 23-year-old, a few years back, she said, you know, Dad, we really need to get back to having Sunday dinners, because we had just kind of grown apart as a family. So we've been doing that for quite some time now. And the conversations that we have at Sunday night dinner, you know, she is, it sounds like she's kind of like your teenagers, even though, you know, she's a little bit older. She has tolerance for any inkling of any of the stuff that, you know, folks our age have kind of, you know, put up with, so to speak. You know, Dad, how can you let this happen? Dad, you know, you're this in the church, you're that in the church. And I'm like, you know, sweetie, Dad's doing what he can.
Here, have some more mashed potatoes for a minute here.
God bless you. She keeps me going, you know, and I'm happy. I'm happy for her push and her friends' push and your kids' push and their friends' push.
Yeah, and you know, and it's not only the Sunday dinners, and I think that's hugely important. We experienced a lot of it during COVID. One of the hidden blessings. I know it was a terrible time, and a terrible time, really bad for a lot of people, and still is. But we benefited greatly. There was no soccer practice, no volleyball practice, no choir practice, no nothing. We had them 24/7, and. You know, it was a lot of Sunday dinners. And, you know, when you can have their friends in for a Sunday dinner or a Saturday afternoon and, you know, have a barbecue in the backyard or something with their friends, it's just great influence. It's, you know, to bring people along. And because, you know, we all live to, especially at that age, a little bit by example. And you know, you walk into 7-Eleven and you treat somebody badly, and all these teenagers are watching you as they're buying their Slurpees. You know, they're that guy was, he was kind of obnoxious to that person.
And you know, the interesting thing of the second piece of that is, Bob, when we were younger, you know, I'll put us in the same age group. When we were younger, if you did something like that, nobody would find out.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It didn't make it right.
Right.
But now, everything you do is front and center on somebody's camera.
That's right.
Right?
Absolutely.
We are held accountable, for better or for worse.
Yep.
You are held accountable. You know, what's the proverbial, big brother's always watching. You know, but if that's what it takes for folks to do the right thing, you know, maybe if you're constantly doing the right thing, if this has changed you to start doing the right thing, start thinking about what you were doing because of what the social media outcome will be about it, then that's not a bad thing.
Not at all. And you know, Deacon, you said something that really struck home with me, and it's so important that people that fought the good fight, like Father Tolton and others, many sisters as well, that they didn't leave the church. And no human institution invented 2,000 years ago could have survived that kind of racism, could have survived our modern day sex scandal, could have survived. It would have all collapsed. But this is historically, there's no way around it, the church that Jesus Christ founded. That's an indisputable fact, a historical fact. And why would Jesus Christ found a church that would then go away?
Yeah.
It won't. It won't. It's got warts and all, but you have to stay with the church and fight these things as opposed to saying, I'm going to walk away. Well, you're walking away from Jesus when you walk away.
No, and like I said, preach, Bob.
Yeah, Deacon, it is such a joy to talk with you, and I know we've got a lot of work to do on this, and I know you're fighting the good fight for all of us, and we look forward to seeing you in person, and also hopefully in the very near future.
Sounds great, Bob. Thanks again for inviting me to chat with you. And always enjoy our conversation.
You too. We'll talk again soon. Thanks so much, Deacon.
Right.
Yeah.
Take care.
You too. That's Deacon Casey Walker, who's the chairman of the Ad Hoc Committee Against Racism here in the Diocese of Sacramento. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Yasmin Castellanos from the Catholic School Department, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
That's me. Welcome back. Appreciate you all being with us here on the Bishop's Hour, and we are pleased to welcome in Victoria Ramos from the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament. Victoria, good day to you.
How are you doing?
Doing very, very well. I was reading about you. You're world famous now in the Catholic Herald.
thank you.
Serving the hungry. Tell us what you actually work at the cathedral as well. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes.
What do you do there?
I am the secretary here at the cathedral.
That means you're in charge.
No, more just like a small person doing God's work.
So, where are your offices in the cathedral?
So it's in the rectory, actually.
Next door?
Yes, next door to the church.
Yeah, very good, very good. Well, tell us, you are right in the heart of downtown Sacramento, and sometimes those of us that see the cathedral as the mother church, if you will, which it is, obviously, and a major tourist attraction as well, in a way that really no other church, I mean, we have churches in the diocese that are tourist attractions, but not like the cathedral. It's so historic and so beautiful, but we forget that there's a parish there too.
It can sometimes get hidden.
Yes, so that must be a bit of a challenge.
It has us challenging moments, but it's also very refreshing to be reminded that, you know, the cathedral is the mother church, and of course, where the bishop's chair is at as well.
So talk about the pandemic and the hunger there in the cathedral neighborhood.
So, you know, at the beginning, it's downtown, you know, it was like a ghost town. You know, we still continue to come to work, and even though the office was closed to the public, we were still operating by phone and by email. So downtown, it just looked like a ghost town. Wasn't normally how we would see it, with, you know, people walking around and state workers and, you know, people, tourists coming in and out of the cathedral. So we knew that we had to somehow try to figure out how to give back to the parishioners and to also kind of feed them spiritually, even though they can't physically be at the cathedral at the beginning of the pandemic.
So how did you go about serving the people in your area?
So, you know, Father started off doing a moment of prayer. Every morning through our YouTube and Facebook channel, you would be able to watch that. We would have the masses. We would go ahead and live stream those as much as we can. Mm-hmm. We would also offer Vespers. So we would also offer Vespers to the people and just kind of stay connected with them through our social media accounts.
So you're in the Herald, you're talking about the call to action as a baptism of fire to quickly satisfy the spiritually hungry with content-rich online platforms. And you go on to say, to serve the hungry now had clear dual meaning as group members rose to new levels of leadership, expanding their routine ministry of Tuesday night food wagon rounds to the homeless to include daily digital offerings to the hopeless, those wandering in a spiritual desert brought on by COVID-19. How long have you been at the cathedral?
I believe this June will mark 2 years as working full-time here at the cathedral. But
so really just prior to COVID, maybe by 9 months or so?
Yes, I really. Just had barely, you know, set my roots here as working here, but I've always been a parishioner of the cathedral.
Oh, you have? So you grew up in Sacramento?
I did. Was born and raised in Sacramento.
And where did you go to school?
I went to ARC for a bit.
Which high school did you go to?
I went to Grant Union High School.
Oh, very good. The Grant Pacers.
Yes, Pacer They're, for life.
I hear that all the time, Pacer for life. You know, I don't know if I've ever heard of a high school that had as much cohesion and as much pride in their school as Grant.
Yeah, it was such a pleasure to be there and, you know, just to be a part of that community.
Yeah, that's a lot of pride in that community and one of our great historic high schools in Sacramento for sure.
Yeah.
So where do we go from here now that things are easing up a bit with COVID?
I know for sure, definitely, we are still going to continue to live stream the masses. That is something for sure that, you know, even 3 months into the pandemic, we realized that even when it started to ease up, we kind of already figured that we had to continue live streaming. Just so those people that are still feeling uncomfortable or for whatever reason cannot even make it to Mass.
Right.
So slowly but surely, you know, we've had the pleasure to continue to welcome parishioners and welcome visitors who come to Mass. So our Masses are on a first-served basis, so we do not have you registered to come to Mass. So it's really nice to be able to have people from the different parts of Sacramento come to the cathedral because they couldn't get into their parish. But it's nice that we offer this for them to come to Mass. So we're slowly but surely moving into welcoming the parishioners back to Mass.
And the cathedral is one of those places, and probably not right now because of COVID, but that you, a substantial number of tourists come through there as well that really want to see and hear all about the history of the cathedral.
Yes. So, unfortunately, at this time, not entirely sure when we'll go ahead and get back to having tours here. Not sure. Haven't spoken about that yet.
And so you have normally you would have regular scheduled tours of the cathedral.
Yes, we would. Tours would normally be on Wednesdays after the 12:10 Mass, and there would be tours on Sundays as well. But at this time, we haven't brought that back yet.
Yeah. I bet sometimes you get tourists wandering in during Mass.
Yeah, you know, sometimes we do, but in the end, what can we really do? You know, we don't have the opportunity or the means currently right now to be able to have the cathedral open during a different hour.
Right, right.
So we just have to welcome people.
Yeah, well, you are in that area, you're surrounded. There is a lot of homelessness, a lot of hunger, and as you say, a lot of spiritual hunger as well. And you're to be commended for all the great work you and your team are doing there. So thanks so much for all you do, and thanks so much for joining us today, and keep the faith.
Well, thank you. You as well.
Thanks, Victoria. God bless.
You're welcome.
Hey,
thank
God
you.
Bless you. Thanks so much. That's Victoria Ramos, and doing great work there at the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament. A lot happening here in the Diocese of Sacramento. The annual Vocations Dinner, the Northern California chapter of the Knights of Columbus, invites you to the 8th annual Vocations Benefit Dinner. It will take place Saturday, July 31 at St. Mary Catholic Church, 1333 58th Street in Sacramento, hosted by Knights of Columbus Council 953. You're invited to meet our diocesan seminarians, hear their vocation stories, hear a wonderful talk from Bishop Soto. Join in fellowship with Brother Knights and parish communities from throughout the diocese. People come from all over the diocese to this. Support our future priests and religious. Acknowledge altar servers and enjoy a great meal from the Buckhorn. And, of course, you get to meet all of the seminarians in the Diocese of Sacramento as well, and just hear their stories and hear what drew them into the priesthood. And they're just as diverse as can be. They're just some remarkable stories, and it gives you just great hope for the future to see the people that are choosing vocations, men and women, here in the Diocese of Sacramento. There's also wonderful gift baskets, silent auctions. It's all on the Saturday, the 31st of July. They're right now, and they had to cancel last year, so because of COVID last summer. But there is a hope that 50% capacity, or maybe even more, or still a couple of months out, that even more than that will be allowed in by that time. It starts at 4:00 with a social hour, and dinner at 5:00, and then the program starts at 6:00, and it just will be a wonderful dinner, a wonderful program. For tickets, you can contact any of the Knights of Columbus at your local parish, or you can call George Bagley. George is at 707-372-4913, or you can contact Don Harmata. Don is at 916-747-2920 to get tickets. Price is just $45. The meal itself is worth the price of admission, or the program itself is worth the price of admission, or you can buy a table of 6 for $250. Bring your group. You will not regret it. Also, Camp Pendola is sponsoring a day camp this year. They're not going to have the camp at Camp Pendola. up in the foothills, but they are going to offer a family camp up there where a family can rent a cabin and use all the facilities, and they will have a cook, and the regular food service will be available there. You won't all be dining together, but it will be the camp experience for your family. So you can do that. Go to Pendola, P-E-N-D-O-L-A, pendola.org, to find out about family camp during the summer. But the day camps, which are a new thing, last summer they did a virtual camp. This year, these day camps will be in person. Camp Pendola Day Camp gives young people an opportunity for an experience of a lifetime while learning new skills, making friends, and growing in appreciation of God's creation. Each day camp will run for a week, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day, and it's moving through four different parishes in the Diocese of Sacramento. It's $125 a week, which is substantially less than you would pay at a full camp experience with overnight and all. These are just 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., which is, there's plenty of time, but there's not an overnight involved. The first will be at Holy Family Parish in Citrus Heights. That's July 5th through 9th, and these are all co-ed. That's titled Fun in the Sun. The second one, Weird Science, will take place July 12th through the 16th at my home parish, St. James Parish in Davis. And then July 19th to the 23rd, Christmas in July, it will be at Sacred Heart Parish in the beautiful city of Anderson, up in the north part of the state, up in right between Red Bluff and Redding. And then Survivor Week will be July 26th to 30th at Holy Trinity Parish in El Dorado Hills. Again, to register for day camp, go to pendola.org, P-E-N-D-O-L-A.org. Also, Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, remembering our fallen heroes, the Memorial Day Mass, Monday, May the 31st, at 10 a.m. Mass, and then afterward, there will be a patriotic presentation at the veterans section of the cemeteries. You're invited to RSVP because there will be limited seating. You can call 916-452-4831 or go to CFCS, that's Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, CFCSSacramento.org/events. There will be three ceremonies, all 10 a.m., May the 31st. The first at Calvary at 7101 Verner Avenue in Citrus Heights, and Bishop Wiegand will be celebrating Mass. St. Mary Funeral Center at 6509 Fruit Ridge Road with Bishop Soto, and All Souls at 550 Glen Cove Road in Vallejo with Father Glenn Girone. So remember that on May the 31st, Memorial Day. Also, Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services will be presenting a blood drive on Friday, June the 4th, in cooperation and coordination with the American Red Cross. It will run from 8:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. at the reception room of St. Mary St. Mary Cemetery at 6509 Fruit Ridge Road. Again, call 916-452-4831 to schedule an appointment. June the 4th, 8:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Also, the Diocese of Sacramento's Office of Vocations has released this. During the week of Monday, May 24th to Sunday, May 30th, seminarians will be on a pilgrimage visiting some of the parishes of our diocese. It's a great opportunity for young people to come meet and hear the seminarians, hear the vocation story. It starts the 24th at St. Vincent Ferrer Parish in Vallejo at 7 p.m. May 25th, St. James Parish in Davis, 1:30 p.m. Also, the 25th, St. Mary's, Tuesday, at St. Mary's Parish in Vacaville at 7 p.m. Wednesday, May 26th, at St. Catherine Drexel Parish in Martell, up in the Nevada, the Jackson area, at 7 p.m. Thursday, May 27th, St. Teresa Parish in South Lake Tahoe at 7:30 p.m. Friday, May 28th, at St. Joseph Parish in Marysville. Look for the steeple in the sky. You can't miss it. At 7 p.m. And then Sunday, May 30th, at Sacred Heart Parish in Anderson, after the 10 a.m. Mass, the noon Mass, and then a 1:30 p.m. gathering. And the hope is that young people may come, meet the seminarians, listen to their vocation stories, talk with them, and hopefully open their hearts to welcome the call to be priests and religious sisters and brothers. You can talk to the pastor at each of these parishes, and also you could contact the vocations office here at the Diocese of Sacramento. Well, even though we are almost through the month of May, a reminder, pull out your rosaries and take, as somebody once said, take a lap around the beads. You won't regret it. The Vatican has dedicated the month of May to the Global Rosary Marathon for the end of COVID-19. And the month of May has been, at least here in the United States, quite good in terms of numbers going down pretty much all over the country. There have been some hot spots. There remain some hot spots, but for the most part, we're doing quite well. The Vatican has announced a rosary initiative dedicating the month of May to prayer for an end of the coronavirus pandemic. The Pontifical Council for the Promotion of the New Evangelization said that for the deep desire of the Holy Father, the month of May will be dedicated to a prayer marathon with the theme Prayer to God went up incessantly from the whole church. The council said that the world's Catholic shrines would be involved in a special way as promoters of the rosary among Catholic individuals, families, and communities. 30 of the shrines will take turns leading a daily live-streamed rosary at noon Eastern time, so 9 a.m. our time. Catholic Church dedicates the month of May to the Blessed Virgin Mary. Pope Francis opened it, this month of prayer on May 1, asking for Mary's intercession. He spoke about the coronavirus and its economic effects in a video message later in April to participants in the 27th Ibero-American Summit in Andorra. The COVID-19 pandemic, he said, has demonstrated enormous sacrifices from each nation and its citizens. The crisis has called on the entire international community to commit, united with a spirit of responsibility and fraternity, to face the many challenges already in action and those which will come. The Pope said that he had prayed for the millions of people who have died from COVID-19 or who are suffering from the illness, as well as their families. That, quote, the pandemic has made no distinctions and has hit people of all cultures, creeds, social and economic strata. He emphasized the importance of considering anti-COVID vaccination as a universal common good. He said, quote, in this area, initiatives that seek to create new forms of solidarity at the international level are particularly welcome, with mechanisms aimed at guaranteeing an equitable distribution of vaccines, not based on purely economic criteria, but taking into account the needs of all, especially those of the most vulnerable and needy. He went on to say it is urgent to consider a recovery model capable of generating new, more inclusive, and sustainable solutions aimed at the universal common good, fulfilling God's promise for all men. He added that in responding to the coronavirus, attention should be paid to reforming the international debt structure and allowing access to external financing to promote economic development so that everyone can get out of the current situation with the best chance of recovery. The Pope concluded, none of this will be possible without a strong political will that has the courage to decide to change things, mainly priorities, so that it is not the poor who pay the highest cost for these tragedies that are hitting our human family. So this is the Rosary Marathon as we conclude the month of May. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy Ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
I feel burning deep inside of me. I feel your spirit.
Calling me cold.